Isaac.
Okay.
Database one was complete and was used, in fact,
for the last financial year's audit. That is basically the information which is cleaned and used to manage a further cleanup of our leasing in this financial year. The lease module is on track to go live on the 1st of April 2016. Instead of leasing year. So to that extent, I think I've covered most of the questions. Insofar as IE works goes, there was a question to use IE works. The development cost for IE works would have been quite astronomical in developing IE works to be an enterprise solution. It was more a data lake. IE works itself, from all the assessments done, could not even perform the accounting and reporting function. It is in that context that the Sage Archibus solution was procured 2 years ago, and we are on track now to ensure that there are proper controls in place. The new systems were developed, taking into account the business process from the beginning to the end. Appropriate segregations were put in place and controls. In essence, we can now manage and control the entire lease procurement from an oversight point of view at the central level in headquarters, and to ensure that even the information captured is now verified and authorized at a central level in Pretoria. So that will obviate the kind of lack of control and management that existed in the past when the Auditor General made those findings about the lack of control. Thank you, Lizzie.
Thank you.
We are busy working with the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer. In this respect, a task team has been established with a project manager and a chief director from the National Services Chief Procurement Office, and in terms of which the month of March is being used to review all the work done to date and to then start a process of consolidating the recommendations for a new leasing framework, as well as the norms and standards that will apply for the terms and periods for which leases will be procured. It is envisaged that draft amendments to Treasury regulations and PIGRs will also be finalized within this financial year. At the latest, this new procurement regime will take effect from the 1st of April 2017. Thank you.
Thank you. And Mr. Ferrotti.
Thank you. I'm going to deal with a few of the questions as well. I will perhaps start with the question that was asked around change management on slide 5. I think slide 5, but it was trying to was to actually give a context with respect to the past, what had happened in the past, and what implications were there with respect to the changes in leadership in the department. Then the change management program that we speak about in terms of the program we are implementing as part of the turnaround program dealt with the factors that they we are dealing with an organization in change, therefore, from a perspective of change, how are we then assisting the people within the organization and the culture to be receptive to the changes that are being implemented from an institutional perspective and a process perspective and policy perspective. And I thought that perhaps we have not catered it as clearly as that, but that is the change management that we were speaking to. The question that asks whether from a verification perspective, at least from an asset register perspective, we are able to reflect or identify how the facilities or properties are being used. Yes, we are able to do that, and similarly to what we have tried to do in terms of providing the information by region, we are able to then also provide similar information indicating how they are being utilized. So, and where they are located. And in fact, each and every one of those properties that we have referred are pegged to a GIS location. The question that was asked around the Port St. John's Road, I think there were two elements for us. The first one is to say that perhaps that road would not be too familiar with the detail as it would be in the competence of the Provincial Public Works Department. However, the issue from a principal perspective as to how we address such matters would firstly be in how we are dealing with the contracting for specific contracts in our contract. And what we try to do is make sure that with every single contract that we engage in, we actually also have a sign up by our legal unit as well to make sure that we have considered the risk survival and risk content, which will enable us to project manage the projects within that context. The question on slide 13 with respect to the appointments. We had flagged two appointments that had not been made. The first one I wanted to deal with is the one on the investment, the investment head right here. Interestingly enough, with this position, we actually finalized the process. And on finalizing, the candidate was actually snatched by one of the large property funds. I think it also spoke to the scarcity of that particular seat in the market. So we have commenced another process to try and fill that with the speed, and we have actually on the target segment as far as that is concerned. We have advertised all these positions before we have had these processes with respect to the appointments on the go. However, we are now focusing, and we have started focusing on the construction head as well. And we are also considering the targeted approach as far as the head of construction management content. When was the structure submitted? We submitted the structure with the minister's sign off in December to the DPFA. The question with respect to the timeline as far as some of those things are concerned, particularly the ones that have been highlighted, there are some specific elements that are outstanding, particularly at the level of the municipalities, and I would give an example with respect to Mandeni, where there are outstanding proclamations from the municipality side. And I think how our process would work is that once we have got those types of proclamations, then there is a level of certainty, we would then start the detailed project implementation plan, which will then give us more defined timelines. At the moment, it is really issue of saying we have done what is necessary on our side, contracting, and we have given the feedback, the documents are in place, we are just waiting for the proclamations to happen, which will enable us to develop on those properties. The question that was asked around whether we have an HR plan and identified resource needs and whether we are in the process of filling those positions, yes, we do have the HR plan and we are continually evaluating the resource requirements. In fact, we've got a committee of EXCO that focuses specifically on HR that needs regularly. From an ICT perspective, a direct question has been asked by the committee, which is asking whether we have been able to fill the chief director position for ICT. We have had an individual who's on contract who has been fulfilling the role, who continues to fulfill the role of chief director in ICT. Can I ask that we handle that?
Thank you, DG. The question on Mthatha High Court, we have finalized the user requirements with the user, and the procurement process is going to begin in April with the actual construction work happening in this coming financial year. to ensure that we give attention to the Mthatha High Court. The other question that was asked was with regard to EPWP, where in slide number 7 we indicated that in 2010, the incentive grant was only disbursed to the level of 50% as reported. But what we can report now is that there have been improvements in this area, and the department currently performs at 100% in terms of disbursing the incentive grant. The other question that was asked was on the revival of workshops. We have focused on the infrastructure upgrade of specifically Cape Town and Pretoria workshops, and the next step now is to, through the PWP program, work on the getting the study skills in the workshop for us to be able to utilize the workshops to also implement our facilities maintenance program. Those are the three questions that one wanted to note. Thank you, Dee.
Hello. In regard to the workshops, the nub of the question is, we have spoken about the workshops. When are these workshops to start working? Is it next year, in 20 years? We've had a struggle of hopes and wishes. The workshop, they should work and what have you. But is it possible to say that next year or 2 years from now, this is what we are going to do? It's not the first time that this issue has been raised, Madam Honorable.
I think you are correct, even before the turnaround strategy. It's because, like, in the Robben Island, there was once an oversight that was going to Robben Island. When we were there, you know, the people that are supposed to be doing jobs in the workshops, they are not functioning. They were outsourcing. These people were left redundant. And we raised those particular matters. And they were saying, no, this issue is going to get an attention. You know, it was 2025. You know, now the turnaround strategy started, and it was that workshops. But it keeps on the
You see, this issue of workshops, when we got out of the 1991 Robben Island, there was lots of talk that we are going for a workshop on this, we are going for a workshop on this. And then Eric Gwala said, I hear all of you every day speaking about workshops. I haven't seen a single one of you carry any tools. Give me your workshops.
Yes, sir. We'll commence in the new financial year with the, because we have done issues that relate to infrastructure of the year with a view to start recruiting in the new year.
Just when you want to hear Radio Freedom goes down. So this information is needed. You speak loud and clear. They want to hear you at the back.
We will commence in the new year with the Freedom.
Yes.
It means April next month. Because the new financial year is next month.
Yeah, just the new financial year.
You know, we'll start with the recruitment.
You start with the recruitment first. People can use the tools of the workshop.
Yes.
Can you make a follow-up? At the workshop, because they're going to revise the existing workshop that they used to have as a department, or there is also an intention of establishing new workshops in different provinces, maybe.
The program has started. And as DG indicated, we started with the infrastructure replacement. So the first phase in our Pretoria workshop, as an example, was done and dusted. Now, what we have done is we have ensured that we revisit the principles of what we wanted to achieve with the program. Now, first and foremost, we wanted to make sure that it is linked to the maintenance program. Now, on the side of the maintenance program, we did acknowledge that there were some weaknesses in the way we were approaching maintenance. So we needed to finalize and make sure that, you would recall, Chair, I had mentioned that the context of how we are approaching maintenance we have done. What we are doing now is finalizing the maintenance planning so that we know in which areas what is required, whether it's equipment, whether it's people, and so forth. But the central point of achievement over and above making sure that it's all linked to the upkeep of the infrastructure. It has to be a program that creates jobs. It has to be a program that creates skills development. And that is where we are saying integral to this program has to be job creation and artisan and skills development. So quarter two, we'll start reporting in a bit more detail with respect to the implementation thereof.
You know, another important aspect that Honorable myself and other honorable members are raising, when they flag the issue of workshops, they are also putting out the importance that the workshops that are reactivated should not only be in the Golden Triangle. What is the Golden Triangle? Johannesburg, Cape Town, Durban. Must also go to all the other provinces, rural areas, outside this Golden Triangle, so that if there's job creation, resuscitation of basic skills, welding, electricians, plumbing, they should target all those other rural outlying areas also, not always in the Golden Triangle. Shall we proceed? Director General.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks, DG and honourable members and Chair. I'll answer two questions. One was had to deal with the operationalization of the PMP on slide 14. I think it was slide 14. The honourable member for Tanya has a question. If we're granted an approval in 2206, why did we then have on slide 14 on item 6 of slide 14, if you may just want to go to slide 14, Paul, the DPW must seek approval from National Authority to establish PMT as you have it in there. Now, I just mentioned that slide 14 is giving an indication of the conditions that were placed on the approval for the establishment of PMTE in 2006. If you look at the text of slide 14, item 6 that you have there, the correct wording, which I may just try to share with honorable members, was that during the first year of operation of the trading entity, which was 1st of April 2006, the department must seek final approval from National Treasury to establish a PMTE. This must be done by 1st of April 2007 and must comply with all the conditions for trading entities contained in Federal Regulation 19. So what it means is that there were particular exemptions that were granted to the department in the first year of operation of the trading entity. And by the time of the expiry of those exemptions, which was the first year, 1 year, back to 1st of April 2017, the department should have then submitted a final approval request to National Trading. And as you know, that has never done, and the reasons why that has never done, I think it's indicative in the slide 6 that was indicated in terms of the change in the leadership and, of the department then. Immediately on slide 5.
Before you go to that CFO, I know that it was the reason that's been given right now. Because of the change in the leadership of the department, it's not a good enough reason for me. Why do I think it's not a good enough reason for me? Ministers come and go. A minister can be there for 6 months, a minister can be there for a year or 2 years. If that minister, or a weekend special. Correct. We tell you correct. A minister can be there for a weekend. But the issue is that the department is not run, the department oversight over the department is the responsibility of the minister. So what I'm saying, the point I'm making is that ministers can come in weekend special or year or 4 years, but substantively the department is run by the director general. The system can't fail just because you have a swap of leadership there. Institutional memory rests with the director general of the department. So the issue that because there was a swap of ministers doesn't pass for me. The issue is there were officials in charge. There was a CFO, your predecessor, who he or she was supposed to know that these prescripts in terms of treasury regulations has to be followed. It's got nothing to do with a minister there, or deputy minister. So you go and look for the proper reason. Don't tell us about that. It's because it's the one the top of leadership. Doesn't know the order. Unless you've got a reason that you can articulate what clearly. The first one that you tended, as I say, is not acceptable to me.
I acknowledge, I hear that. But in terms of the actual results, it's still in the slide 6, as you see, first slide 5. It was not just a change in minister that the minister, it was a change in the actual leadership in terms of the various management of the departments. You see the two box, yellow box circles there. It was a DG, DG's changes. So the two box means, in that there were three DGs. There was the one who came from 205, and 206, there were two additional DGs that were appointed. And in addition to that, the department is there for chief operations officer. Under whose responsibility the operationalization of PMT was under? And in actual fact, I was just telling the DG and the head of PMT that coincidentally last week I read the documents that relate to the PMT in terms of the history. And ironically, this was pretty much in text written that because of DG's change and the chief operations officer change, the ball or the eye of the department moved away from PMT altogether. And that's been the result of this. So yes, I understand, Chairperson, that, that's management's responsibility. But that's exactly the point. Because of the change at the top in management, that has resulted in that approval not being given. What we are seeking to do in terms of slide 14 was to indicate the conditions that were given to have the PMT operationalized and give an indication today as to whether we've achieved all those conditions or not. And in terms of condition 6, we've indicated that not all conditions were achieved. The structure, in terms of the actual organizational structure of PMTE, has not provided to DPSA, and I think Mr. Sorok has indicated that was done in December, and we're still waiting for the approval of that structure to formally establish those entities as it was contemplated in 2006. So that's the clarity I wanted to give. Thanks, Chair. And then I think there was a question as well on the how far are we with the asset register. Yes. And I thought maybe I should just try and provide some kind of a summary on the asset register itself. Maybe just by way of a background, the asset register, it was used to be in the main account, in the main one department of public works. We then, by virtue of the term of functions, where we transferred the actual asset portfolio of state to the PMTE as the implementing entity on behalf of the department. The assets were also transferred as part of the transfer of functions, where the management of the of those assets was going to be resided within the PMTE. So it transferred the assets to the PMTE. Now, the Accounting Standards Board has a statement which said, if you transfer your assets, as a result of the transfer of functions, you are given a period of 3 years during which you have to ensure that you've done the correct valuation of those assets. And I think there's a recognition of the extent of the assets of state, how large those are. That within the year of transfer, you cannot, with clear level of certainty, determine the value. And again, because they contemplated that the transfer of the actual assets as a result of the function, would be from the main board, which is accounted for on a unified cash basis, into an entity which now accounts for on a different basis of accounting, which is CRAP. So you are given a transitional period in terms of directive 2 of 3 years to ensure the valuation is right. Now the valuation in terms of the asset that you have on the balance sheet that you will reflect, you've got to, as management, you are making a number of assertions or representations to the reader of the financial statements. One of these assertions are as follows. One is completeness. Have we accounted for all the assets that we have? Are they complete? Two is the accuracy of the information that is there. Is the information accurate? Four is do those assets really exist? So you've got to make a representation about existence of those assets, that you own them. You've got to make a representation of that. And importantly, have you valued them correctly? Now, if you look at all these assertions, from the time when we did the transfer of functions, which goes back to 2013-14, we needed to prove all those other things but for the valuation which applicated in terms of Directive 2. We are given a grace period during which you must work out the proper value of these assets. That valuation, that grace period ends this year. Therefore, we have to complete the valuation. But in terms of all the other assertions, we've done that. That's why there has never been a finding on the assets in terms of the world. So, with the accuracy and all of that, you could say we're spot on in terms of all of that that we needed to do, and the AG's opinion bears testimony to that. However, the variation, the AG has never really looked at them. It has never been an important focus. Why? Because we have an exemption in terms of the transitional arrangements in terms of Directive 2 that I spoke about. That has expired this year. Now we have to do the variation of the assets. And the report that has been given to the committee is that we are sitting at about 80 billion rands of the assets built, which constitutes about 80%, coincidentally, 80% of the actual total portfolio. And that's where we are. The balance of the 20%, we're going to complete, because we have to complete by year end. And year end, it may year end be the 31st of March 2016. However, for us to submit the financial statements is the 31st of May 2016 as per the PFA requirements. So we are going to complete the residual 20% between this now and then. And we'll have 100% valuation that we'll have done in terms of the assets themselves. We then certify all the assertions that we are making as management of the assets that we'll be disclosing in the financial statements of the property management trading entity. I hope that clarifies.
I'm responding to the question in connection with the 93 pending cases. I think it's two parts of the response. In the first instance, I think our labor relations unit has been making a tremendous effort to reduce the number of cases in the pending column. What you have there is these cases ordinarily drag out for a long time, and in order to seek a conviction or to otherwise deal with the case, we forced to follow due process. But I can also report on the positive side that this report is at 25th of January 2016. The statistics there are indicated on slides 37 onwards, the top there. I'm told that by the office that another 43 cases have been added to the completed column. So what we have is the number of completed cases is now 146. So we made tremendous progress there, and I think in future we want to keep that progress going so that we keep our number of cases pinning down. And in fact, at this time, we're commencing our investigation within the requirement of 30 days, and we want to achieve optimal timelines for the completion of our disability case. And I think we are moving in that direction. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Very much.
There was a question on whether or not we have commenced with reducing consultants. Yes, that is correct. There are projects where we hire consultants that are no longer in progress. The list review consultants, the consultants that we're dealing with, the operation clean audit, have all been discontinued. However, what we have done in the process has been to augment our capacity through recruitment, and we recruited amongst other entities from the very same companies that were assisting us. so that that expertise that they have been able and the knowledge they have been able to acquire through working for us is now used for the benefit of the department.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kopani. You need to follow up. Honorable Adams, Madam, did you have your hand up earlier? Okay, fine. So it means that let me start with Honorable Kopani. And then I revert to Honorable Madok, and then Honorable Fultani, and Honorable Memahir. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, according to slide number 10, in terms of fighting fraud and corruption, there are about 24 criminal charges, the letter that has been referred to South African police. So I wanted to find out in terms of the data score regarding those cases. Are there anybody that are in jail? What is happening? And what is worrying me also, Chair, according to slide 29, there's a number of suspensions of people without pay, but when I look through the list, I don't see any people who are suspended with pay. We do have such people. I wanted to find out how many of those people who are suspended with salary, and in terms of the value of the money, how much are we losing as the department? My other question, Chair, is regarding the lease payment. It is clearly stated here there were some overpayments and underpayments. But in terms of overpayments, whether the department has tried to recover the money, those who were underpaid, what is it the department have done? They just say that they've engaged the landlord. That is what is said to us. My last question, Chair, is just a follow-up regarding those two positions that are supposed to be filled. My question is, when I'm looking at this position, that a key position within the PMTE, but what are the implications if this position remain vacant, or currently, what is the implications in terms of these two positions not being filled? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. Honourable Madlo.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. I think I'm covered by the Honourable Member that has spoken around the issue of the implication of field posts. But they've explained it is because it's a test skill. That's why they are not getting, wanted us to hear about the implications. And lastly, Chair, we want to commend the department, the moves that they have done for the progress in the asset register. However, Chair, we want to check because it's talking about the 20% that they are going to complete now. We want to check, does it include the assets in the municipal area? Because one was right that the Yama Act doesn't include the municipal area, but we are one government, which means to say that when we are saying that we have completed the asset register for the government, if the municipalities are not part of that asset register, it will mean to say that it's not really complete. We want to check in regard to Kiyama and the inclusion of the assets in the municipal areas. Thanks.
Honorable Fultani, just before I give you the chance, and add on to the contribution made by Honorable Kopani in regard to cases being followed, but I think it would also be of relevance to the portfolio committee where people have been convicted and it is known what sentences they received. That's also known if there's a public need. So you also need to furnish us with that information. And then it's also necessary for the department and other departments also to have a register of such convicted individuals. Otherwise, Ben will be convicted for fraud, corruption, stealing, here in public works, and then next month I just assume the Department of Trade and Industry. All they see is a good CV there, but
there's no follow-up, so at least there should be no refuge for scoundrels within any government department. Honorable President.
Thank you, Chair. Well, I must express my absolute pleasure at the response around the Mthatha High Court. We look forward to the first report on this at the end of the first quarter. I want to plead that it be specifically included, progress reports at the end of the first quarter of the new financial year. Then we'll know that we're getting there. On the Port St. John Road, we welcome the response that we're getting that it's actually a provincial contract. But the way it goes there, Chair, is that in the National Assembly, we approve a budget of the department. Because of time, the department transfers to the provinces. And that's money that we approved in the NA. I made a specific request. We would like to have a copy of that contract within 2 weeks, please. This is a very serious matter. Get a copy from the provincial department and let us have it as a committee. You don't have to send it direct to me, send it to the secretary of the portfolio committee, because that is a very critical issue. 180,000 rand a day is serious money. We want to see if that is actually.
Lastly, Chair,
before you go to your next point, Honorable Sutton, I think the proper procedure to follow in this case, if the department disperses to the province, the department has got a right to find out what happens to the money. The case in point that you make mention of is public knowledge. So I would suggest whether it comes from the ministry or from the director general, they need to find out what are the issues at play there and then come and report back to the committee. Asking for a contract is just a contract. But procedurally from department, from the ministry, saying that this matter has come to light, what are the issues pertaining to this? You have also mentioned the penalty figure. Whether there's work done or not, every month people get paid. So those are issues that can be specifically raised. So then they can table whatever response that they get. That would be a more full engagement of the issue.
Accept your honor. Thank you very much. In your closing remarks, I would like for them to be put on time in terms of time. By when must we get that? That is very serious. Lastly, Chair, on the response that we got from the CFO on slide 5 and the rest, we welcome the response, but my comment, I'm afraid, is that the process is taking rather too long. Please try and find a way. We know that you're handling a turnaround strategy. We know the issues. You've been transparent enough to tell us what issues you've confronted with, but try and find a way of accelerating matters. Come 2019, we don't want to be still talking about this. We would like to have a well-machined department there. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I see no further request for... Honorable Member Tiela, you were last, madam.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think I've somehow covered, because I was on slide number 25 about the overpayments and the underpayments. I wanted to know exactly how much is the department losing here, and what are the plans for recovering the money that we have lost or we did the overpayment on, and how are we also settling those that were underpaid. And the issue around the EPWP, I didn't hear any response on it. Thank you.
Okay, you will just speak to it and if you could respond, remind us. Okay, you may respond, Director General.
The questions that relate to fraud, discipline, yes.
Thank you, DG. Honourable Member, with respect to the suspension, the suspension without pay is one of the sanctions. We don't do suspensions with pay. There wouldn't be a punishment as such. So that is why we reflect. those cases that were out there. We haven't had any record of suspending somebody with me. With respect to the criminal charges, I regret to say that we have great difficulty dealing with these matters with the SAT, if I must be honest. In fact, some of our best investigation, that I think because of the police.
Here in this committee, all you want from me is honesty. I'm worried when you say, if you must be honest. Mr. Bond, you have not been honest.
Thank you, Jefferson. Jefferson, the cases referred to the SAT are among our best outcomes. In fact, they refer to the detection of criminal conduct. But what transpires is once you hand over to the police, it normally dies somewhere in prison. And it is regrettable. We've had the DC communicate with the SAT on a number of occasions on our behalf, requesting feedback on these cases. And what you find is that the capacity in the police with respect to investigation of commercial crimes, it appears to be very weak. And what you have as a consequence is that these cases, you have very little progress. You have great difficulty locating investigating officers. You have great difficulty closing these cases and bringing them before court. In fact, I would use one particular example. In our Northwest Regional Office, we found an individual guilty in internal disciplinary hearing on charges that are very similar to corruption. And this would mean a criminal referral to the SAT under the Prestar law, the Corrupt Activity Act. And in this particular instance, the criminal element has not gone anywhere. The disciplinary proceedings internally have already concluded, and the person does not. But the criminal charges have not been brought because the investigation is drawn out. It has never concluded. So we don't have great success. In fact, Chairperson, I can say that with none of the 24 cases can I give you a success story. I can say that all of these cases, in terms of our register, would say still under investigation. So we are struggling to close these cases with the SAT, and I'm hoping that in the future we can do better in managing these. We need to find a different strategy in working with the SAT, perhaps providing some capacity from outside and using their special powers in opening a criminal docket and bringing a case before court. But the current system is not working for us. All of these cases are still pending under investigation. Thank you.
Yeah, okay. I think the question related to the overpayment sounds like 25, and subsequent questions related to that, so that the department losing any money. Maybe I might just recap in terms of what really transpired with us, is that this is a product of a number of two things. One is, as we said, we did a cleanup of our lease portfolio. When we did a cleanup, and in terms of the financial statements that we are preparing, and going back to 14-15 years of the period that we were preparing those for, when you do financial statements for 1 year, you've got to show a comparative, and that comparative figures of the previous year is going to incorporate transactions that go 3 years into the previous year, basically. So if you look at the period of reference, we're talking 5 years, basically, going back to 2010-11, up to 2014-15 when we reviewed all our leases. And there was a total of 5,300 leases, some of which were still running, some had already expired, of the thing, but part of what we had to look at to rectify the historical transactions of the department. And when you do this exercise, there's a number of financial calculations to do for your accounting entries. And one of those is your straight lining kind of thing, work out your straight lining. I can tell you the detail of what that means, but I'm just trying to give a sense of where we're coming from. And secondly, what we did was just compare what we've been paying against the lease agreements. And then we came to the figure of 527 million rands that we have of potential overpayments. Now, if we unpack the figure further, we actually, and this is part of the exercise that we are doing, so that on average, we are paying leases in advance, of which amount, advance amount is included in the 527, plus minus 300 million, because leases are paid 1 month in advance. So we have that included in there. So that we can isolate out of the 527 that leaves us with a figure of R230 million of potential overpayment. What we did, we then engaged the landlords to determine what really transpired here. And the responses that you've got is that the landlord came out and said, well, in terms of what you had, in terms of your records, our records, there were subsequent changes to the lease terms in terms of the payments, there was more square meter ratios that have been occupied and all of that. So these amendments were not properly documented and went back into the history. And we went to rectify that, and the process is still underway to fix that up. So for all intents and purposes, as we are sitting right now, we do not believe the bulk of this is as a result of the losses. The issues around the leases that were a problem, we've isolated them, referred to necessary investigations that are happening. These are just as a result of when you do the accounting entries, the calculations, we get to these sort of figures, but we call it an extra month by engaging the landlords to determine whether we really did overpay or not. And the status is that it doesn't happen to be that much of a situation. Now, if you take the whole overpayments and underpayments out of the, and you compare it to what we had in terms of special exposure on leases, and over the periods that we actually reviewed from 2010-11 up to 2014-15, we have a total lease payment of almost close to about 13 billion rands. And what gave us a level of comfort was that from the 30 billion rands total payment that we did, this is what could say was a potential challenge in terms of the accuracy of the payment that we made. So substation, we believe that it's all correct. And if you take away the payment, which is advanced payment, the residual that's left is fairly small. But even additional to that, we've engaged the landlords and they've indicated that there were changes that were subsequently made and now documented those changes. The process that I've said, I mean, there's currently quite a number of issues that are running, and it takes a bit of time, but we know that we will. We don't have a choice. We have to complete this exercise so that by the time we submit the financial report of May, this is all done accurately and completely. Thanks, sir.
We want that last cent to Chumasa Council, CFO. I hear you speak about accurately and completely. All we are interested in is that last cent. Without it, you can't balance your books. Good folks. Director General, or you still want to say something, man? Let's end.
Honorable Chairperson, there was the issue of EWP, where we indicated that in 2010 it was reported that we were defacing our grants at 50%, but over the years that has improved. At current, we are defacing the grants at 100% as part of the progress that was made through implementation turnaround.
Thank you very much, sir. The point is noted. You have restated it ably. Director General, it seems for today this is how far we can travel down this road. Tomorrow is another day. Town House, 9:30. How come? This is where we'll be outside Harlem Town House. Honorable members, I would like to thank you for your attendance, Director General, officials from the department. Thank you very much, good folks, stakeholders, parliamentary, monitoring, group, not groups, one group. Everyone, thank you very much. You are at liberty to enjoy iced tea and iced coffee. Not from Woolworths, but from the poorest chef. Thank you, good folks.